Sometimes we talk to women that say, I had high blood pressure during pregnancy, but it resolved, so I'm okay. But we know that the risk for heart disease later in life increase, even if your blood pressure normalizes postpartum, that you're twice as likely as to someone who had a normotensive pregnancy to develop heart disease later in life, four times increased risk of heart failure later in life. And so it's not benign when our blood pressure rises in pregnancy. And
the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists calls the 12 weeks after giving birth the, quote, fourth trimester. This is the latest episode in the Women's Health Cast series about important aspects of the fourth trimester, including physical recovery, postpartum mental health, birth control after pregnancy, and more. 1 in 8 people in the United States have high blood pressure or hypertension during their pregnancies. What does this mean for their health moving forward? Our guests today joined the Women's Health Cast to talk about blood pressure and cardiovascular concerns during and after pregnancy. Dr. Kara Hoppe is an associate professor in the UW Department of OBGYN Division of Maternal Fetal Medicine. Megan Knutson-Sinais is a research coordinator and health coach. They discussed how common blood pressure issues are during pregnancy, important signs and symptoms to be aware of, and what people should know about their lifelong cardiovascular health after high blood pressure issues during pregnancy. From the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, I'm Jackie Eskins, and you're listening to the Women's Healthcast. I am very thrilled to be joined today on the Women's Health Cast by Dr. Kara Hoppe and Megan Knutson-Sinais, who are joining us to talk about heart disease and high blood pressure in pregnancy and beyond. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
We're working on this series about fourth trimester concerns, and this episode is kind of part of that. Things that either happen during pregnancy or happen during pregnancy recovery that people should be aware of and prepared for. And a couple years ago, Dr. Hoppe, you gave a community talk that was so great about blood pressure issues during pregnancy and kind of what that can mean for your cardiovascular health longer in life, almost throughout the rest of your life. And that's part of why I wanted to talk with you both today, just to learn a little bit more about these things. And I guess I'd like to start with how common heart disease or cardiovascular disease is in women in general.
Excellent question. And I think this is a real focus of ongoing healthcare and healthcare needs, as well as improvements for women's outcomes. So in general, we think about over 60 million women, or 44% of the United States, are living with some form of heart disease. And despite the recent declines in cardiovascular mortality in women over the past decade, cardiovascular disease remains the number one killer of women.
How does high blood pressure or hypertension, I think we'll use those a little bit interchangeably today, how does high blood pressure contribute to some of that cardiovascular mortality?
High blood pressure or hypertension is a very major risk factor for developing heart disease, as I sort of just reflected. And the numbers I told you before, if those weren't enough, more than 56 million women in the United States, or again, 44% of our population, have high blood pressure, defined as the top number of your blood pressure is a systolic number being over 130 and the bottom number, the diastolic blood pressure, being over 80 or higher. If you think about all of what I just said in general, simple terms, 1 in 5 women of the reproductive childbearing ages have high blood pressure. So if you look in a room, it's a lot of people around you. There's a lot of hypertension or high blood pressure. And then furthermore, there's many more who are underdiagnosed and don't know that they have it. And then of the people who have it, really, we're doing a very bad job at controlling it. Having high blood pressure increases the risk of developing longer-term heart disease, really specifically talk about strokes and early death. Again, a large contributor to that overall cardiovascular death rate. And it's really also important to know that Black women are nearly 60% more likely to have high blood pressure than white women.
Just to kind of lay out some terms here, so we're talking about cardiovascular disease as a really big umbrella term, but that can include things like heart disease, heart attacks, stroke, heart failure, and those are terms or like conditions people might be a little bit more familiar with. So working from sort of that baseline of definitions, let's talk specifically about hypertension and heart disease then in the context of pregnancy and in that like postpartum period. In particular, What can you tell me about the role of hypertension or high blood pressure in what we kind of see as like rising rates of maternal deaths?
Right now, we think about in the U.S. that there is about 1 in 8 pregnancies that have high blood pressure in their pregnancy. So that's about 13% of our delivering women in the U.S. However, in Wisconsin, those numbers are even higher. So we think those numbers are anywhere between 25 to 30%. So that would be 1 in 3 to 1 in 5 pregnancies, which is a lot, right? So the other thing to really note is that 1 in 4 pregnancy-related deaths in the U.S. were due to heart disease and stroke. And a more appalling thing is that probably only 6% of these women had a prior diagnosis of a heart condition. So maternal deaths, like we all know, are on the rise, and cardiovascular disease is one of those things we really need to start paying attention to. Hypertension itself is a large contributor, whether it was pre-existing or it developed in pregnancy, to those cardiovascular disorders that we talk about, like stroke and heart failure and things like that. So that precursor, and then, you know, that outcome is sort of accelerated in the context of pregnancy. And with our increasing rates of having these problems, they're leading to poor outcomes.
I think it's important to note that sometimes we talk to women that say, I had high blood pressure during pregnancy, but it resolved, so I'm okay. But we know that the risk for heart disease later in life increase, even if your blood pressure normalizes postpartum, that you're twice as likely as to someone who had a normotensive pregnancy to develop heart disease later in life, 4 times increased risk of heart failure later in life. And so it's not benign when our blood pressure rises in pregnancy. And what Dr. Hoppe's getting to is, let's be aware of our risk factors. Let's manage them now to prevent those adverse outcomes later in life.
I'm really looking forward to learning about some of the things that people should be more aware of in the postpartum and beyond period. I also wanted to ask if there are risk factors that increase somebody's likelihood of having high blood pressure during pregnancy, things to be kind of on the lookout for.
Great question. So one of the biggest things that we know is a driving risk factor is having underlying chronic hypertension. So you have high blood pressure before your pregnancy even starts. A lot of the other risk factors are related to common risk factors for poor pregnancy outcomes in general. So things would include being overweight or obesity, smoking tobacco products, having underlying diabetes, high cholesterol, physical inactivity. And those things are really modifiable risk factors, but there's other things specific to the pregnancy. So in general, we know that there can be an overlay of risk with different racial backgrounds. Specifically, our Black birthing patients are having worse outcomes related to cardiovascular diseases. And additionally, we have other risk factors like having a multiple gestation or twins or more in your pregnancy. Extremes of pregnancy, so younger people and older people. First-time pregnancies. Sometimes new partners actually add increased risk of developing high blood pressure in the pregnancy.
How does high blood pressure during pregnancy affect the pregnant person's health, like during the prenatal period?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of the focus is really on the fetus and the unborn child, but it is important to know there's both maternal and fetal risks. So when we think about that, on the mom side, you know, on the extreme side, there's increased risks of death, stroke, accumulating fluid in the lungs like pulmonary edema, hurting the kidneys or kidney damage, which oftentimes women will recover from, but may be left with more chronic kidney injury, can lead to heart attacks. The placenta separating early from the uterine wall, which is called a placental abruption and often presents with vaginal bleeding, higher rates of C-section, and also higher risks of losing extra blood or hemorrhaging after birth. But it's also important to know if you walk into a pregnancy with underlying hypertension that developing preeclampsia is a higher risk as well. So I kind of separate that maternal risk of getting preeclampsia is higher if you already had the hypertension. But regardless if you have chronic hypertension, if you just get, you know, pregnancy-related hypertension, all these risk factors also may happen from the mom side of things, which makes it a very scary experience. But on the baby side of things, you know, we're really trying to balance the mom's health and the baby's health. And one of the largest contributors is preterm delivery. And so we try to maximize the time that the baby has inside while keeping the mom safe. But it's one of the larger contributors to preterm birth. Other things to think about would be smaller for gestational age or growth-restricted babies. And so a lot of times people who have underlying hypertension or develop hypertension, their placentas may not be as well developed, and we think contributes to growth disorders. And then lastly, you know, we worry a lot about, you know, that fetal well-being and the balance. And so unfortunately, there is an increased risk of fetal death and sometimes neonatal death with the combination of dealing with high blood pressure or those cardiovascular-related disorders in pregnancy.
Just as a follow-up to Dr. Hoppe mentioning risk factors, and my background as an exercise physiologist, I, you know, want to promote physical activity throughout pregnancy as long as, you know, your healthcare provider doesn't, you know, say to not, to refrain from it. We know that exercise in pregnancy is safe, and the recommendations are the same for general population. So 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise, 75 minutes of vigorous exercise per week, or a combination of both, excluding contact sports and others that wouldn't be safe, such as horseback riding, of course. But generally, walking, that sort of thing, is totally safe. And we know, you know, you mentioned risk factors for like C-section, that when we exercise in pregnancy, there's a large meta-analysis conducted in 2017, and they found that our risk for C-section reduced if we're exercising throughout our week when we're pregnancy, even 30 to 60 minutes. So that's not even meeting the guidelines, but 30 to 60 minutes of exercise broken up of at least 2 days over the week can reduce our risk of gestational hypertension and then cesarean delivery as well.
What are some of the signs or symptoms of high blood pressure during pregnancy? How does someone know that they're experiencing this?
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes high blood pressure a really tricky and scary thing is that they call it a silent disease, really. So the number one symptom is nothing. So let's just sit on that for a second. You know, however, it can rapidly turn into severe headaches, nausea, vomiting, stomach or abdominal pain, right upper quadrant pain. They could have shortness of breath, feeling anxious, sudden increase in weight changes, perhaps, vision changes, chest pain, feelings of just like unwellness or the flu. So it really can present in a many different fashions for different people. And that's why we're really trying to promote awareness of any or all of these symptoms.
Earlier, you mentioned the balance of taking care of the pregnant patient as well as kind of balancing fetal health. And I wanted to ask about what blood pressure treatment during pregnancy looks like. And in particular, there's a fairly recent, we call it a multi-center trial. So this is a study that happened at, I think, different academic centers and hospitals all over the country. So it's a pretty big trial of blood pressure medication during pregnancy, correct?
Yep. So that project was called CHAP, or Chronic Hypertension in Pregnancy. It was an open-label, multi-center randomized trial where we assigned pregnant women sort of like a flip of a coin to two different groups. So to be in this trial, women had to have mild chronic hypertension and be pregnant with a singleton fetus or just one baby with a gestational age of less than 23 weeks. And what we did with that flip of a coin was randomize people either into antihypertensive medication treatment in pregnancy or no treatment until their blood pressures were severe. So that severe range cutoff was 160, that top number, systolic number, 160 millimeters of mercury or greater, and on the bottom number, the diastolic number, 105 millimeters of mercury or greater. So the comparison was really keeping people's blood pressures less than 140 over 90, or to keep them off medications until they achieve the severe range blood pressures. The conclusion of that trial was in pregnant women with mild chronic hypertension, the strategy of targeting a blood pressure of less than 140 over 90 was associated with better pregnancy outcomes than a strategy of reserving treatment for only those who had the severe range high blood pressures. There was no increase in risk for the small for gestational age birth weights. And historically, this is really important. So we undertreated women with high blood pressure in pregnancy because we were worried about the baby, right? So we have a large, high-quality randomized trial that shows treating moms, keeping moms safe, and at a lower blood pressure threshold resulted in better maternal outcomes without compromising the baby.
What does treating high blood pressure during a pregnancy look like? Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what some of the options are?
So treatment in pregnancy for high blood pressure really depends on the origin of what we're talking about. So we just talked about the CHAP trial. You heard about that. We know that treating blood pressures now are safe without compromising the baby's size. So treatment in pregnancy would either look like a woman knows she has chronic hypertension, she's on medications. And I think the conclusion of that trial very strongly suggests if you have a person who comes to your clinic who has underlying chronic hypertension that are on medications, please leave them on their medications. Obviously, review what medications are on. We have very few medications actually that are unsafe in pregnancy. But taking them off, you know, increases the risk that they'll have a poor outcome, right? So we have a couple go-to medications in pregnancy. The categories would be a beta blocker. Most commonly, you'll hear the medication type called the Betalol. And they also have a category of medications called calcium channel blockers, most commonly used nifedipine. So those are the two go-to medications. There have been some further assessments to see if outcomes are better on, you know, either one of those medications. I think the jury's still out on that. But those are our two, like I said, go-to safe medications. It's not uncommon. So outside of pregnancy, different medications are used as first-line medications for treatment of hypertension. So beta blockers are not actually a category that's a first-line agent outside of pregnancy, but more women seem to be on a beta blocker just because if people already get pregnant, we know it's safe, right? But there's an increasing interest in using ACE inhibitors or ARB-type medications. So that would be like lisinopril or enalapril or
Losartan.
Losartan, yes. So those medications are not safe in pregnancy. So if a person comes to the office and are on one of those medications, we advise that they stop those. But really any of the other medications that are used, like diuretics and other things, would be second-line agents in pregnancy but would be safe. So again, in that chronic state, we would advise people see a provider before they get pregnant so we can optimize their medications, optimize their blood pressure control, make sure that they're well on their way, you know, for an optimal pregnancy. Now, if high blood pressure develops in a pregnancy, we didn't really talk about, you know, chronic hypertension versus a gestational type hypertension. But anybody who has high blood pressure before 20 weeks of the pregnancy would sort of categorize them as chronic hypertension. And that, why is that important to your question? It's important because we will treat chronic hypertension in pregnancy with medications in that mild range, but we will not treat preeclampsia in the mild range to control their blood pressures, okay, with medications. The exception to that is if people end up getting severe preeclampsia, which is high severe range blood pressures, again, the 160 over 110. And I know I keep throwing out these numbers, but they matter based on what we're going to do. So if people end up having severe range blood pressures after the 20 weeks, we think it's related to the pregnancy, actually women get hospitalized. And again, we talk about that maternal fetal balance, right? So we're trying to keep the mom safe. We need to keep the blood pressures low. We'll treat with the same blood pressure medications we just talked about to keep the blood pressures controlled. And we'll use them sometimes one or two medications to keep people pregnant until the time where we think it's best for baby to be born. So in a pregnancy that's complicated by hypertension that needs to be treated because it's otherwise too severe, they're in the hospital. And then the baby's usually born no later than 34 weeks. So again, just talking a little bit about the medication treatments and when we would or wouldn't use medications in the pregnancy.
So you've talked a little bit about hypertensive disorders of pregnancy, kind of in general. And I know we have a few questions about one specific disorder in particular, which is preeclampsia. So we're joined today by our communications intern, Paige Stevenson. I'm very glad she can join us. And she has some questions about preeclampsia that she is going to kind of lead us through.
So speaking a little bit more on preeclampsia, is it possible to have it after delivery or how common is it postpartum?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So the tricky thing about figuring out how many people actually get it postpartum is hard because we're thinking about a new diagnosis that wasn't found before, right? So the only way we really find that out is if people present to the hospital because they're not feeling well and other things. So there's probably way more people that have it than we know about or that get diagnosed. It's hard though, you know, you just went through a birth, you're not feeling well, you're not sleeping well. And so All the same symptoms of, you know, just not feeling well, not, headache, blurry vision, chest pain, shortness of breath, other things, you know, be evaluated because you may have developed preeclampsia. And again, one of the more common reasons people get readmitted after they leave the hospital is high blood pressure. And that may be that you had it beforehand and it just got out of control at home, or it's kind of a new onset thing. So just to really answer your question about like how common it is, it's more common than we probably think. And the other thing is that there's sort of a misperception that you deliver your baby and kind of your health returns. And so there's this other side of the coin, though, that you've delivered your baby and you're still at risk for things for a while. And so really just recognizing that even though if I had preeclampsia before I delivered my baby, it may get better for a few days, but we know a lot more now that blood pressures will continue to rise when you leave the hospital. So we really need to talk to people about, like, you're not safe just because you delivered. You need to keep an eye on this. And how long? Probably for, like, at least 2 weeks postpartum, but things can still happen 6 to 12 weeks postpartum. The further you get out, the less likelihood of those issues. And the hot time for it to happen is probably in that first, 4 to 14 days postpartum.
We're lucky here. If you're treated or delivered at Meritor Hospital, Dr. Hoppe has a stack home monitoring program where you go home with a blood pressure monitor and have a specialized nursing team to report your blood pressures to so you can get treated in real time. So you've solved the problem of going home and not knowing what your blood pressure is in a way.
Yeah, I think it's important to know the standard really is just, promoting awareness. But there's a lot of limitations in being able to provide people a blood pressure device or a blood pressure monitor. And here we make that possible for people who have high blood pressure when they birth. The gap, though, still remains that it's not offered to everybody. And so everyone doesn't get to go home with a blood pressure device. And so I think that's the tricky part. Probably everyone deserves it, but we still don't know enough about like how many people really need it. So I think hopefully that's the wave of the future.
How is postpartum preeclampsia treated differently than preeclampsia during pregnancy?
So as I take a deep breath, I think you're going to see things changing coming in the future. We don't have evidence for what really to do postpartum. And so it's really an opportunity and an area of focus right now. So the focus I think we're going to see more of is treating those blood pressures, keeping them controlled, less focus on actually readmitting people to the hospital. And the other thing I want to talk a lot about is really keeping an eye on those blood pressures. So, as Megan alluded to, we have a program here, which is unique in the country, but it's called remote patient monitoring. And so giving people the tools of understanding how to take their blood pressures at home, what are the blood pressure numbers that we're worried about, being able to respond to those and treat people's blood pressures, that avoids the whole part of coming to the emergency room and needing to have that acute care, and then hopefully reducing those poor outcomes we've talked about. So again, I think the long and short of this whole message is we need to be aware of the blood pressures. We need to know that they can come back and be worse than they were in the hospital, and we need to treat them to keep people safe.
If someone does have high blood pressure before or after pregnancy, what does management look like?
So this is a really complicated question, and to try to keep it simple, I think the goal before birth is that we're trying to keep the mom and baby both safe and maximize the time that we have for the baby to grow inside without compromising the mom. That may look like being in the hospital. It may look like being on blood pressure medications. It definitely looks like increased appointments in the clinic and often results, in early births. The focus changes after birth to really, we don't have a fetus or an unborn baby inside. So we have more options for the mom after birth. But we have to really still pay attention to that at that point. It's keeping those blood pressures controlled. Again, a brief time in the hospital, but more awareness and education needs to occur that we need to keep those blood pressures low, through the whole postpartum period. So that may be being on blood pressure medications they weren't used to taking before. It also means possibly more clinic appointments if you don't have a way to keep an eye on that at home, or participating in a program that, can be done remotely to submit your blood pressures every day so we can adjust things as needed. But again, I think the big difference is that before birth, we have a baby on board, and so we have some limitations. And we're just trying to do the best we can, for the mom and baby. And then afterwards, again, the focus is keeping the mom safe, allowing her to, still participate in her baby's cares and bonding. But we also then get into this more long-term, like, is the blood pressure going to get better? Will they develop a chronic condition? And that there needs to still be a focus that people engage with their healthcare long-term, because anyone who has an adverse pregnancy outcome will have a long-term risk of cardiovascular disorders.
And there are lifestyle behaviors we can adapt or maintain throughout pregnancy and postpartum that contribute to blood pressure control, such as exercise, physical activity, watching the salt that you eat, being compliant with your medications, getting sleep. There are a number of things that we can do within our control. You know, if you have any questions, talk with your provider, of course, but generally safe and just good for overall blood pressure management with or without pregnancy.
Can other postpartum changes have impacts on blood pressure, such as mental health or breastfeeding?
I just want to reflect a little bit on both, you know, the mental health piece and the breastfeeding part. So we piloted a program here in the past couple of years where we were actually trying to identify gaps for postpartum experiences, specifically in our Black birthing population who has worse outcomes related to hypertension and cardiovascular diseases. And the big things that came out were, yes, we need education on our high blood pressure, but we have high rates of mental health concerns and lower rates of breastfeeding typically. And so in a program ideally, you know, designed would be to include all three of those or a big triad. So we had a partnership that we designed with a community doula organization that worked alongside our postpartum remote monitoring program. And the beauty of that is that many of the doulas are lactation counselors or have a lot of experience with helping postpartum women with breastfeeding. We know that breastfeeding probably lowers the cardiovascular risk. How much it really helps with hypertension, we looked in our data to look to see if blood pressures were lower for breastfeeding people. We didn't really find that, but our numbers maybe weren't enough for that. But there are physiologic changes and kind of epidemiologic associations that people who breastfeed have some maybe bit of improved cardiovascular recovery or outcomes. So there definitely should be a focus on helping people breastfeed. And also with breastfeeding, we think there's, you know, better weight loss and other cardiovascular protective things that come out of that. So and there's also benefits to the baby for it. So I think the breastfeeding piece of it is really important, and that in a program like we put together, we showed that we could improve that for a very high-risk vulnerable population. But in general, we have really great support in the hospital for, you know, lactation and breastfeeding and other things for people. So that's that. On the other side, mental health. So in our remote monitoring program as well, we do screen for mood disorders. And actually hot off the press in the last year, we looked at folks who reported a positive depression screen, and in people of high blood pressure in their pregnancy, 25% or so have reported mood disorders, which is on a validated PHQ-9 score. Again, when you're talking about mental health, depression, mood symptoms, we see a lot of our anxiety patients with anxiety, when they are participating with home blood pressure monitoring, they're feeling anxious, their blood pressures may be reported higher. So it's important to, like, be calm, don't drink caffeine, like other things that can make your blood pressures higher. But in people who have, like, acutely high blood pressures that are anxious, their blood pressures continue to get higher and higher the more they check it. So I want to be careful that, like, depression, anxiety, like, it's not okay to be like, my blood pressure's higher because I'm just anxious or I'm depressed, you know, things like that. But there's definitely an overlay of your mood, your mental health, blood pressures, but I can't necessarily say, like, that makes your blood pressure worse. Does that make sense? There's also a lot out there about chronic stress and how that influences the development of earlier chronic disease. And so I think just that itself, you know, a lot of people are experiencing a lot of stressors and a lot of things, and it's important to take time for self to try to avoid that long term. But in the acute setting, I'll say, you know, I'm not really sure about the breastfeeding or the mental health in that acute setting, but we should probably focus more on the bigger picture of it. And in people with high blood pressure, they seem to report difficulties with both of those things, when we know that both of those things being controlled can reduce their long-term risk of cardiovascular diseases.
Are medications associated with high blood pressure safe for breastfeeding?
Yes. And so we talked a little bit about we have more options once people are delivered, the baby's not on the inside. However, people are very worried about the consequences of breastfeeding, taking these medications, and then the medications going through the breast milk. So all the medications we use in pregnancy are safe. So the categories we talked about were like the beta blockers, the calcium channel blockers. But we also have additional benefits of using other medications to treat blood pressures at that point. So the other medications I talked about, like the ACE inhibitors or the angiotensin receptor blockers.
Yep.
Those medications are now safe to be used. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's aware of that. And then also sometimes we use diuretic type medications, but all those medications we think are safe for breastfeeding.
And they're first line antihypertensive agents. So it's important, you know, to share that with your provider. If your blood pressure is not well controlled and you're on a beta blocker, maybe consider trying a first line agent now that your baby is out and it is safe, such as those calcium channel blockers, ACE inhibitors, and ARBs. You might get better control, which is important for your health now and long term.
We've talked a lot about high blood pressure and some specific disorders that can happen during pregnancy while someone is pregnant. And we've talked a bit about managing blood pressure in that immediate postpartum period. But does having high blood pressure or preeclampsia or another specific blood pressure disorder during pregnancy increase someone's chance of developing any chronic illnesses further into the future?
We do know the literature supports evidence of having a hypertensive disorder of pregnancy, a risk of having diagnosed chronic high blood pressure increases within 10 years postpartum. And we also know that our risk of then when we have chronic high blood pressure, our risk for cardiovascular disease, strokes, heart attacks, heart failure, that increases later in life as well, 2 to 4-fold. So yes, does increase our risk.
What does that mean for someone's future health care? So as we're continuing to see physicians at different points throughout our lives or thinking about the way we manage our lifestyle and things like that, how does knowing that we had these high blood pressure issues during pregnancy affect the way we interact with our healthcare teams, affect the way we manage our diets or make other choices in more of a long-term sense?
Mm-hmm. I'll start with this one, and Dr. Hupp, you might have feedback too, but staying engaged with your healthcare team is important. Scheduling and attending an annual physical or well visit, having your blood pressure checked and discussed at those appointments. If you know your blood pressure is high, home monitoring is a great way to stay on top of it. And that way, if it's in an unhealthy range or hypertensive at or above 130 or at or above 80 consistently, reach out with your doctor. Having other risk factors assessed like high cholesterol, have your lipids checked every 5 years or so, have your blood sugar checked, and if it's high, then you can take action. And then there are, of course, lifestyle behaviors that we can adopt, and we've talked about those a little bit, but American Heart Association has a great tool. It's called AHA's Life Essential 8, and it has really good information as far as exercise, sleep, nutrition, managing our weight, managing our blood pressure, managing our cholesterol, healthy or safe use of alcohol, that sort of thing. And so I'll let Dr. Hoppe chime in, but there's definitely lifestyle behaviors that we can adopt and maintain to support our blood pressure and health overall.
And I think one of the other big advocacy points is just making sure your provider knows you had an adverse pregnancy outcome. So that does go beyond just pregnancy-related high blood pressure, preeclampsia, but having had a preterm birth or other specific kind of poor pregnancy outcomes. We don't do a very good job at transitioning that pregnancy-related care to, ongoing medical care. So there's even advocacy to have like a problem list, like adverse pregnancy outcome occurred, right? And so the things that Megan talked about is really important in kind of the ongoing surveillance of your care, whether you have more children or not. Because otherwise a lot of people just have a gap and it's not focused on, and then we forget about those amazing guidelines and tools and other things that we could do to improve your long-term health.
So we're not just talking about like your OBGYN team or the people you go to for pregnancy care or reproductive health care, but like making sure that any any physician you see or any medical provider you see for any really other body system, or just making sure everybody knows that
absolutely
this thing happened in pregnancy, because it does affect well beyond just like reproductive health care.
Yep. And currently there's not really a cardiovascular risk profile screening tool that really includes adverse pregnancy outcomes, or actually, frankly, people less than 40. And so I think that also will change. There's like so many opportunities for the future, but just knowing how to advocate and knowing that having an adverse pregnancy outcome or preeclampsia like does increase those risks, being able to bring that up, talk to your provider about it, and then make sure you get the right surveillance moving forward is important.
Can you tell me a little bit more about a study I've heard a little bit about, but I'm looking forward to learning, dealing with health coaching, and specifically, I think, is it for people who have high blood pressure issues?
Correct. So Dr. Hoppe has a current study going on right now offered to patients that completed her STAC program through Meritor Hospital. And we're testing out the MyHeart intervention, which was a large randomized multi-center trial that has recently been completed, published, but testing that intervention of health coaching over the phone with her postpartum population. So anyone who completed the STAC program and has chronic high blood pressure and or is still taking blood pressure medications at 6 weeks postpartum and or still having persistent high blood pressure at or above 130 over 80 and higher at 6 weeks postpartum, they are eligible to participate in this study. And what we're doing with this study is it's a randomized trial, so half receive the health coaching over the phone and half do not. That's our standard of care. So you complete your six-week STAC program, you may or may not attend your six-week postpartum appointment, and then it's really up to you as the patient to decide how often you're going to check your blood pressure, engage with your healthcare team. For our intervention arm, I call every 2 weeks for 4 months and then once a month for 6 months, and we complete the study at a year postpartum. So we're providing just more extended postpartum care throughout that whole first year postpartum. And on those calls, I ask that they continue to check their blood pressure at least a couple times a week so we can come up with an average of what their blood pressure is. If we're seeing they're hypertensive, I call their primary care clinic with their permission just to notify, just an FYI, and then it's up to the provider if they follow up or not with their patient. And then we discuss lifestyle behaviors that we know impact our blood pressure, and it's patient-led. They get to decide what is important to them. They set their own goals. They create a health vision on our first call together. That's just a personal statement of what you want for your health for the long run. Very broad. Might be exercise more. It might be to eat better. It might be to manage my stress. It might be to lose weight. It might be to quit smoking, reduce my alcohol intake. It's their choice. And then I just work to support their own personal health goals throughout the process of our calls together.
So I wanted to ask about what are some of the common either like categories or recommendations or things that you discuss with people who are part of this program for managing or addressing health and high blood pressure after pregnancy. So.
Sure. Right. And it's very patient-led. So it varies, you know, from person to person, call by call. I'd say the most common things that come up on our calls are exercising consistently, improving our nutrition, managing our stress. We do have evidence-based guidelines for exercise nutrition. It's a little more gray with stress management since stress is like our perception of stressors. So, you know, for those conversations, we kind of get into what makes you feel calm and what are things that you feel in the flow with, or what takes your mind off things that are making you feel stressed or anxious. What are some good kind of self-care things that you do? So that's different for each person that we talk to. A lot of women will say reading or, you know, exercising can manage stress, or yoga, meditation, those sorts of things. Exercise, we know the guideline is 150 minutes of at least moderate intensity exercise per week. And moderate intensity would mean I can still carry on a conversation when I'm exercising, but I need to take a breath every few words or so. Vigorous would be I can't talk while I'm exercising. And then so that recommendation is a little shorter, like 75 minutes per week is the recommendation, or you could do a combination of both. But an example might be a 30-minute walk 5 days a week. You've hit your target if it's moderate intensity. And then nutrition, we talk a lot about salt intake. there is a recommendation of 2,300 milligrams or less per week to help manage our blood pressure. That comes from the DASH diet, dietary approaches to stop hypertension, and that we use in the study because it is evidence-based and it emphasizes, you know, high intake of fruits and vegetables, 4 to 5 servings of each per day, which is a lot. So a lot of our participants in the study don't have that as a personal goal, but, you know, trying to work toward that. And then whole grains, low unsaturated fats, and then, you know, desserts, allowing for about 5 a week. So just overall a healthy diet. And a lot of people, you know, may not meet the guidelines, especially with a baby at home, but any progress they make is beneficial. Any amount of exercise you can get in versus not is beneficial. Any serving of fruit or vegetable you can get in versus not is beneficial. So highlighting that as well, trying to kind of uplift these patients who life can be really hard in that early postpartum phase. So just kind of celebrating the wins and then helping to support whatever positive behavior we can is important on our calls.
As we are kind of wrapping up our very informative and super helpful interview, and thank you both again so much for being here, what do you wish more people understood about how blood pressure issues that come up during pregnancy can carry forward through their health for the rest of their lives and knew more about how to approach these problems?
Well, I think Megan and I live and breathe it with our patients, participants, you know, I think the real exciting part about my job, probably Megan's job, is that we can try to make change. And so we're trying to do a lot of education, awareness, knowing that what happens in your pregnancy, you know, does carry forward in your life, providing opportunities to not only immediately, affect and keep people safe, but long term, you know, provide the opportunities to make changes in their life to like benefit them down the road. The moral of the story is that, you know, what's happening in a pregnancy or what's happening as a young woman and into your, you know, further life, like all that matters. And so I think we have the opportunity for change. And I think that's our goal here. So Megan.
Right. And I think there's opportunity to not only take care of your health, but your whole family's health. A lot of these people are leading their families and setting the example for their children, their partners. And if we can instill in our kids that exercising is part of normal day-to-day life and eating well is what we do, then they'll benefit from that in the long run as well.
I think we also acknowledge there's tons of barriers, right? So you may want to do these certain things, but like every person has a barrier to it. And so I think another exciting thing is trying to advocate within our communities, find partnerships, work with health payers and other things just to really open up the support to allow people to make change is another important thing that I think we're trying to work on.
Dr. Hoppe, Megan Knudsen-Sinais, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
All of the resources and research mentioned by Dr. Hoppe and Megan are linked in today's episode description, and you can find that at womenshealthcast.podbean.com. The Women's Healthcast is a production of the UW-SMPH Department of OBGYN. This episode was produced and engineered by Rob Garza. OBGYN Communications intern Paige Stevenson provided research and interview support. You can listen to the Women's Health Cast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find the UW Department of OBGYN on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the handle at WISCOBGYN. Let us know how we're doing. Rate and review us in your podcast app and let us know what health issues you'd like to learn about at the link in our episode description. Thanks for listening.